Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hi there, Tuesday edition of the Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. You can find us on Facebook and give us a like and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle at Steve Jones PSU. Subscribe to our podcast. Of course, it's free. Go to either Google Play, Apple Podcast app, iTunes, type in Steve Jones Show, hit subscribe. We send the shows right to your mobile device so you don't have to hunt for them from here to there. And also you can access 3 months of shows at stevejonesshow.com. And Steve will check in just a moment from the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Be with you live till 5 here on WKOK. And then we'll have our late day news roundup with Taylor Schultz. And then tonight we'll have CBS Sports Radio get you fired up for the next phase of March Madness, a little over 48 hours away from the Sweet 16. And we got quite a bit of hoop talk today. Great friend of the show, Penn State alum Dana O'Neill from The Athletic will join us a little later this hour, 3:35. And also next hour, Brandon Gotten, who is a play-by-play announcer for Big Ten Network, BTN, and also for the nationwide March Madness radio broadcasts on Westwood One. Brandon covered the bracket with Duke over the weekend, including the thriller on Sunday night, and Brandon was actually our play-by-play call of the day yesterday. Brandon will join us live at 4:35 today before he heads for Louisville for his next assignment this weekend with Westwood One. So the matchups in the Sweet 16, four games on Thursday, four games on Friday. And so far, and the brackets are kind of chalky. They really haven't been this chalky in quite a while. But this is when the cream is rising to the top and you get some great matchups. So Thursday night, you got Florida State Gonzaga. That's the first game. Game two, Purdue Tennessee. And then it'll be Texas Tech Michigan and Oregon Virginia for Thursday. And then the four-pack of games on Friday night, LSU and Michigan State, Auburn, North Carolina, Virginia Tech, Duke, ACC matchup, and then Friday night we'll wrap up with Houston and Kentucky. Thursday and Friday winners will move on to the Elite Eight on Saturday and Sunday. So we'll have more hoop talk coming up later with Dana and Brandon and Steve. And we're now, speaking of, we talked about Thursday and the Sweet 16 beginning. Also on Thursday, you got the beginning of the 2019 Major League Baseball season. We are your home for the Philadelphia Phillies and Bryce Harper. We will not have a show on Thursday afternoon as the season opener at Citizens Bank Park between the Phillies and the Atlanta Braves. That'll be at 2:30 on deck time and first pitch 3:05 with Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson back with you on WKOK. Kevin Franzen will be part of the radio network broadcast again this season with the Phillies on WKOK. Kevin's going to join us tomorrow afternoon. And then, of course, on Friday, from Studio 22, the most interesting man in New England, a.k.a. Steve's brother, Kevin Jones, to finish out the week. So that's what we have planned. And, of course, I always have a bunch of other irons in the fire to work on, and things are percolating and marinating for always looking ahead to future shows and who we can get on the show. So always working on that behind the scenes for you. NFL meetings are going on in Arizona, and the competition committee has introduced a new proposal for expanding replay that would allow some non-calls to be reviewed. And that's a response to a three-hour meeting yesterday where all 32 coaches expressed support for finding a way to correct clear and obvious officiating mistakes no matter how they happen. Unlike a pair of proposals submitted last week, the new rule would have addressed the controversial failure of officials to call pass interference in the fourth quarter of the Rams' victory over the Saints in the NFC Championship game. Saints coach Sean Payton arrived at the league's annual media breakfast early this morning to continue advocating for replay expansion. Payton says, "I'm not complaining, just trying to think forward. It's what deductible are you comfortable with? I don't think it was good for anyone. Coaches met yesterday for 2.5 hours, and it was the best meeting I've been a part of in my 13 years. Payton and Mike Tomlin on the competition committee led that meeting yesterday. So owners are continuing to debate the replay today. Maybe they'll have a vote for tomorrow morning. We'll go from there.
Here's one for you. How about doing less?
Less is more. I keep going back to that replay late in the Duke game on Sunday night and all those angles. And it's like, okay, yeah, we're going to get a clear-cut verdict as to what happened. But, boy, you see all those different angles, and it just drags and drags and just seems like it gets harder when it should get easier.
Instant replay in theory is tremendous. And it needs to stay, but it needs to have some realism to it. We are now to the point where we're examining a fingernail. Did it go off a fingernail of the other guy out of bounds? No. You got 30 seconds. Okay, instant replay was meant to take care of the obvious and egregious mistake. Right?
You would think it would take away the overthinking of it, but it seems like we're still overthinking.
Because what they're doing in every sport is they're trying to be absolutely perfect. When it turns out that nobody out there is perfect, you don't have perfect play calls, you don't have perfect execution, and you're not going to get perfect officiating. When you have to sit there, and let's take an egregious, an obvious one. A guy going to the ground, his knee is a good foot off the ground, the ball comes out, it's a fumble. Okay? And replay shows, okay, you're like, hey, you know what? Okay, that's taking care of the obvious and egregious. Guy goes to make a catch, he's got his left foot in, the right foot's out. Obvious and egregious. But when you're starting to look at to see, was his toe, is there enough, do I see enough green between the toe and the white sideline? Or basketball, did it go off that fingernail of the defender? Like, we're at that point now? Guess what? You got 30 seconds. Make up your mind. Move on. If it's not obvious, move. Okay? Get back to the game. Get back to the game. There are going to be things that happen. I mean, the kid for LSU the other day made the winning bucket against Maryland. He took 3 steps. Okay? He took 3 steps. What, do you want to go to replay and challenge it that he traveled? I mean, come on. I mean, he took 3.
So in the NFL,
the pass interference thing, look, the pass interference change I'd make in the NFL is I'd make it the college rule. Right? Instead of this trying to grab up 60 yards, because you know what's the amazing thing about the NFL pass interference rule? There's a gigantic assumption made on that play. You know what that assumption is? They're assuming you caught the ball. They're assuming you're going to catch the ball. Really? So you're now going to move the ball 60 yards on an assumption. You're going to assume they would have caught the ball. I don't know. I don't know if he's going to catch the ball. Ball might be slightly overthrown. He might juggle it, may go off the fingertips. He may just flat out drop it. He actually may be tilting toward being out of bounds. Okay. That's one of the great assumptions of the NFL rule. The assumption is you're going to catch the ball. No, you're not.
So just do an automatic across the board, add 15 yards to the spot of the foul.
Or if it's beyond 15, yeah. If you pass interference and it's 9 yards, 9 yard penalty and an automatic first down. Okay.
So what I was thinking, like when the quarterback's out there in the field, he can hear the signals from the offensive coordinator, but after a certain period of time, the audio cuts off. Is it like
15 seconds?
15 seconds. Maybe they should put something together where the officials only have a certain amount of time, and then the video gets cut off when they're trying to figure out a replay.
Well, first of all, let's go to the fraud of this, and here's one of the frauds. All right. You have to look at the field official who now has to take the time to walk to the sideline. Oh, and we all get to see he's using a Microsoft Surface. Really? Really? I mean, that's where we are now. It's just as important to the NFL to show the Microsoft Surface being used as it is as to whether the call got right. Right? We see it every time now, right? We see that right there. There's the blue Microsoft Surface.
Oh, yeah. All part of the marketing.
Exactly. Well, I'm sorry. This isn't marketing. These people paid money. Make the game move. I mean, everything stops now. The one thing the NFL does do well, they tell everybody, and the same thing with college football, they tell the stadium what the deal is. College basketball, you need to mic one ref and tell the arena what the call is instead of this fraud of going, Penn State was playing Nebraska, there was a bad call, whatever, they looked at it, and I'm sitting right next to the TV guy, and Paul Zelk comes over and tells the TV guys what the deal is, and I put my hand up, and he looked at me and brushed me off. Like, excuse me, I've got an audience too. Excuse me, every person in the arena doesn't know what the heck you just called. There's 15,000 people there that all paid money, paid for gas, paid for a parking space, paid concessions and everything like that, but they're the last ones to find out what the deal is. But the TV audience found out right away. Really? Okay, the ref should be mic'd. I also think they ought to do in the NFL what they do in college football, too, is they ought to just put an extra official, a bank of monitors up there, and they should be looking at every play. That way they're ahead of the game in case something comes up and it's challenged. They can handle it quicker. They can handle it quicker. But there are too many stoppages in play. Okay, here we go. Let's see if it's a fingernail. Okay. That's one thing people forget. I'm going to go way back now. The 2006 Orange Bowl that Penn State won over Florida State. It was a long game because of triple overtime to begin with. But you know what also made it a long game? There have been problems in a couple of other, if you remember, the couple of other major bowl games. There have been a couple of officiating problems. And in the Penn State-Florida State game, they replayed everything, it felt like. Every time you turn around, oh, they're going to replay it. Okay, they're going to replay it. It's like, okay, the game loses its flow. The crowd loses its juice. The teams now do more time standing around and waiting. Hey, sports is not about standing around and waiting. It's about action. People want to see action. Watching a guy at a Microsoft Surface is not action.
Well, and you combine that with the expanded timeouts here during the tournament, too.
Well, yeah, expanded timeouts and tournaments. But I'm talking about the NFL now. And the NFL, what's more important to them, getting the call right or their Microsoft Surface deal?
Remember that one time Belichick slammed the tablet down to the ground?
Yeah, exactly.
Old school.
Yeah, that's old school. And right. You know what? That's where you get called out for being a fraud. There is no need for the lead official to go off. They're looking at the call in New York, right? Let them call and then get to you on the radio. There's no need for you to go over in the stadium and look at your Microsoft Surface.
All right.
It's not a gigantic screen there, you know. Okay. You notice how big the screen is on the thing?
9.7.
Yeah. And yeah. you're gonna tell me with on a sunny day you're really taking a look at that?
Unless the screens are 4K. But yeah, the glare, I hear you.
But again, what's important to the NFL? The Microsoft Surface deal is more important to them. It's money. How do you get to be a $25 billion, right? And they don't want to hear that. They don't want to be called out on it. But guess what, right? Call the show, tell me I'm wrong. Still waiting for the call. We got a lot going on today. Dana O'Neill's on the show today. We'll talk to her. Dennis Dodd wrote about the Tate Martell transfer. He has some interesting points about that.
Well, you did too last week. Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing this. Yeah.
But he has some interesting points and some interesting info about the Martell situation going to Miami. I think there are some people at Ohio State would now say he's your problem. I always love this. Sometimes, we always hear about the grass is always greener someplace else. Sometimes you're just looking for any place that has grass. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right, great to have you with us. Today, Dana O'Neill from The Athletic. Next half hour, Dennis Dodd, college football writer, CBS Sports. We're going to talk about the transfer of Tate Martell and if there are any ramifications moving forward in the transfer portal. And 435, Brandy Gowden, BTN, Westwood One. He called the Duke-UCF game. Get his opinion on certain elements. A very strong Sweet 16. By the way, TV ratings up 9% in the 4 days. Highest number since 1991. How about that? In an era of declining ratings across the board in so many things, so many TV programs, not this. Not this at all.
So we were talking about instant replay a second ago. I will say this. I think it was really the nice added touch this year is whenever they're replaying replays on TV, they bring in Gene Steratore. I mean, quite a few of our listeners know he's both an NFL and NCAA basketball referee, but some may not know that. But I know you certainly have. Crossed paths with Gene many a times.
He does a fine job. But you know what? There are too many replays now. Again, replay was put in my opinion, to take care of the egregious error. And I don't mean the pass interference call in the Saints-Rams game. That's an egregious error, but that's not why replay was put in. And now they're trying to do everything. Everything is so micro. If it has to be micro to get something right, or to take your best guess at it, Move on. Move on.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. One of my favorites, Dana O'Neill from The Athletic. Hello, Dana. How are you today?
I'm great, Steve. Thanks. How are you?
I'm doing well. We can talk about college basketball because the last replay finished about an hour ago. They can go to the next round.
It feels that way.
I mean, I'll touch on this before we get to the tournament. But what is the replay or the length of them doing to the tournament and doing to the viewing experience?
Well, I mean, I think it's frustrating for all of us to sit there and watch them. Even if I'm in the arena, it's agonizing because it kind of lets the air out of the game depending on the circumstance. And, I think people get bored and they get aggravated. I always understand on the flip side is the argument is you want them to get the call wrong. No, of course you don't want them to get the call wrong. But I think we are coming to the level of Zapruder film insanity where it's like, did the tip of the ball grace the rim? I mean, I get it, but my gosh, it should. Let's just basically say, look, if it's close enough with the blind eye, it's close enough. We can't get down to, like, right. back into the left.
Completely agree. Now I want to get to the tournament. Top three seeds in each bracket get to this point. Now, people talk about the lack of upsets, but is there a flip side to this, Dana, that you really have the cream has now risen to the top and we could have a great Sweet 16?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, I think all along this season people felt like there were maybe 12 teams or so, 15 if you want, that probably had established themselves as just a little bit better than everybody else. That's essentially what we're seeing here in the Sweet 16. You know, I think everybody loves maybe one or two good feel-good stories like a Loyola of last year, because that was a good team, by the way, that beat a bunch of good teams to get there. But, you know, mm-hmm. A team that earns it I don't think would have been a bad thing, but you know, we're looking at some really good matchups from this point forward and a potential Elite Eight that could be bananas with some really big brand-name schools going head-to-head. So, you know, people will watch this, let's be honest. People like to watch things that they are aware of and accustomed to, and that, I mean by that the general fan, not the, you know, the very involved fan. So this will certainly help the game in terms of people watching it more.
I want to ask you about Hachimura because you wrote the article about him in The Athletic, which was, again, as usual, really well done. What struck you now about his story, but also what he means in Japan?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty fascinating. You know, Rui Hachimura is a great player, and I think in any other season, you know, he would be the big story or one of the big stories this year, but with Zion Williamson, just nobody can get out from underneath his shadow. He's a terrific player. He's going to be drafted. He's going to be a lottery pick, which has never been the case for a Japanese basketball player. And the sport is just kind of starting to gain some traction. It was always a baseball country, but basketball, you know, via NBA deals where they broadcast live games and the Olympics coming in, people are kind of getting into basketball over there. And Rui is the guy that's sort of at the tip of the iceberg because he's the best player they've ever had at exactly the right time. So it's interesting because here he's pretty quiet. He's pretty, you know, nice kid, doesn't really get a lot of attention. He's fine with that. But in Japan, it's like he's LeBron. I mean, it's really crazy. So it's interesting how he has to straddle these two worlds.
But he also has a mysterious background, doesn't he?
Well, it's not so much his background as a mysterious. He's mysterious about his background. So he grew up in a very rural part of Japan, and is just very protective of sharing his parents' names. Like, usually you can go and find someone's names, as you know, in a media guide or through the sports information department or somebody, and nobody knew his parents' names. And I eventually went and asked Rui, you know, what they were, and come to find out the reason nobody knows is because he doesn't want anybody to know. And it's not to be mysterious so much as it is to protect them from kind of the Japanese media frenzy that he knows is already there and is only going to get worse the closer the Olympics come. So he's just very protective of them, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Now, the one player from Japan that I've at least been around in broadcast games, because Penn State's played GW a few times, is Yuta Watanabe from GW. Did he set the table in some ways for a guy like Hachimura?
I think so. I mean, you know, it's sort of been like building. So it was like, you know, Watanabe got to play at a division, was the first player to get a Division I scholarship. So now here comes Rui, has a scholarship. He's the first one to get into the tournament. He's the first one to get drafted. So, yeah, absolutely. It seems like it's a progression thing of guys just learning the game over there and becoming interested in it. The high school is kind of taking action. The difference with Rui Hachimura and Watanabe, Watanabe came over here to finish high school. Rui came directly from Japan to Gonzaga, which I think the Japanese people take a special pride in because a lot of guys, you know, choose to go over to the United States to kind of Americanize themselves, and he didn't.
How did Gonzaga find him?
Well, Tommy Lloyd, their assistant coach, their associate head coach, I guess. You know, Gonzaga has a long history of international players. You know, they've got, you know, Killian Tilly on the roster right now, and he's from France. They've got, they just had a long history of really good international players. He had a, he, Rui had a great under 17 FIBA Cup appearance, and so people started to hear about it a little bit. So his name got out there, and one of Tommy Lloyd's contacts through FIBA reached out and said, you know, this is a guy I think you might want to take a look at. And he did, and then lo and behold, you know, just things got better and better. But understand, when he came to Gonzaga, he wasn't by any means a finished product. He only averaged a few points a game his freshman year. They kind of wanted to redshirt him, but he didn't really want to. But, I mean, so he's grown into this. I mean, everyone thought he could be good, but he was not by any means like, oh, here's a great player. We know it. Everyone's going to be after him when he was in Japan. They kind of went and found him.
Former Nittany Lion basketball player Tom Hovas coaches the Japanese women's national team now. And he's, you know, and I've talked to him several times about how the sports really caught on there. As you point out in your article, they adore their athletes. Midori Ito, yeah, the great figure skating champion, Hideki Matsui. And, of course, we just saw how Ichiro was treated last week as the conquering hero going back to the Tokyo Dome. How is he treated and how is he viewed in Japan, and what can he do for the sport there?
Well, I mean, he's already, you know, people have equated him to like a rock star. And when he was going back this past summer to play in the qualifying games for the World Cup, you know, there was a full-page ad taken out that said, "Hope is coming back." I mean, he's a big deal. They absolutely adore him already. And, you know, the closer... They were 0-4 in the qualifying games before he came over, then they won four games in a row. So he just, you know, elevated that entire team, and in that regard, elevated the entire nation. You know, the Olympics are coming in 2020. That's going to be his star turn. You know, it's already a star turn, but it's going to be even bigger. He's going to be a huge deal for them. And then it's just a matter of people looking at him and saying, okay, I want to play basketball too, and that's what they hope is going to happen. The double sword of all this, of course, is, you know, if you don't do well, then it becomes a problem, right? I mean, then you have so much to live up to. That's what happened to Midori Ito, I think. Everyone remembers her landing a triple axel. Nobody remembers she won a silver medal, except for everybody in Japan remembers she won a silver medal because they expected a gold. So that's the double-edged sword that Rui's going to have to live with, is that everyone's going to love him, but he's going to be expected to achieve some rather difficult things.
Okay, after watching that bracket in person, what was your thought on, because seeing it live is different. What was your thought looking at that grouping and that bracket in person?
Out in Salt Lake?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I saw Gonzaga back in Maui in November, and I thought then that they were the best team in the country, and they have done nothing to change my opinion because they have so many guys that can score. Rui Hachimura was terrible in their game against Baylor, and Brandon Clark went for 36 points. You know, and if it's not Brandon Clark, it's going to be, you know, Zach Norvell. It's going to be Killian Tilly, who's finally healthy. Josh Perkins can go up. Geno Crandall comes off the bench. They are so deep. They score a bunch of points. They're not, you know, ridiculously talented defensively, but they're not bad. They will deflect passes. They will go on at you, and they're tough and they're big. I think that I thought they were the real deal, and like I said, I just think they look really, really good right now.
And they play at a pace that's different than everybody else. You know, let's take Michigan, for example. Michigan wants to go at about 66, 67 possessions. Gonzaga wants to play at like 73, 74 possessions. I mean, to me, it's fun to watch them play.
Yep.
Did it take a little bit to get Tilly reintegrated into what was going on? Was there any adjustment? Just sometimes getting a really good player back takes a little bit of an adjustment.
Yeah, that was interesting because I think, ironically, I think it worked out well. They lost that game in the West Coast Conference Tournament, and everyone thought, oh, my God, what's wrong? But the good news was Tilly was just coming back into the lineup at that point. He was able then over practice for an extended period of time to work more with the team, to figure out his role. You know, I mean, they started Brandon Clark in his absence. That's not going to change. So he's taken over, but they've learned how to work with him because, few had always thought, I'm going to have Hachimura, I'm going to have Tilly, and I'm going to have Clark. What a lovely problem to have. And he's had ideas of how to kind of balance the three of them all season long. Now he's finally able to. And, you know, and you were talking about pretty brand of basketball. I mean, that's the thing. They have assists on, I forget what they had in that game against Baylor, but it's usually if they make 35 baskets a game, they're going to have an assist on 27 of them. They are so good at working together, so bringing Tilly in has frankly been seamless.
Yeah, and you can see that. They're just, again, they are a fun brand of basketball because they just go out and they play. There's a flow to their game when I watch them play.
Yeah, I agree. It's pretty.
Yeah, no, it is. It absolutely is. Now, as for the rest of it, are there any expectations that you're looking for in this round here, like determining factors that move certain teams forward?
Well, I think, I think both Tennessee and Virginia have been less than impressive sometimes. You know, Virginia took a while to get going, and Tennessee couldn't close in its last game. So I'm curious to see how both of those teams, I'm going to Louisville tonight, actually, how they come out of the gate just to see kind of if they can establish themselves. You know, Tennessee is going to have its hands full with Matt Harms inside. I think Kyle Alexander is going to be a huge X factor. No one talks much about him, but I think he's going to be huge for them in this game, and I'm anxious to see kind of how he handles that sort of attention. He hasn't really had to deal with it at all. Duke is Duke. I don't even know at this point what you can expect out of them, or I think they are who they are. And Michigan State, I think we're going to have some, like I said, some pretty mean brand matchups. Duke and Michigan State. I expect a Kentucky, Carolina, maybe. We're going to have some fun here going forward.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun going forward. What about Duke's inability? I mean, look, they get their 3-point numbers on volume. When you watch them, obviously Williamson's a cut above. I mean, that's easy. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to see that. But what do you think of Duke when you look at the other parts?
Yeah, well, I think, so that's been a big question. Obviously, when he wasn't playing, they didn't look so sharp, And I think the 3-point shooting is an issue. I mean, how did Villanova win? How did Carolina win? How did Villanova win? They shoot threes. You got to have somebody on there. You have to shoot a million of them, but you got to be relatively reliable, and they're not. I mean, Cam Reddish has been sort of, an enigma, I guess is the best phrase, and I think they really need him to be sharp. I think the other guys are exceptional. I think R.J. Barrett needs to get a little bit better at passing the ball, so that could be problematic. I think sometimes if they get tight, he just kind of tries to do one-on-four. They haven't been able to shoot threes all season. They haven't been able to shoot free throws exceptionally all season, and it hasn't hurt them too much. So I guess it's easy to question those statistics, but obviously they've found a way to win. I'm just curious, it was interesting to watch them against Central Florida in a tight game. I got to say, they were pretty poised, So.
Yep. No, I agree with that. That's one thing you look at. When a team cruises all the time, are they poised enough? And they were, but I'll say this. We talk about the 3-point shooting. Who's the guy that bailed him out on 3-point shootings? One of the worst ones on the floor. That was Zion Williamson. He knocked down three.
I know. He's delightful. I mean, anybody who watches college basketball and doesn't like Zion Williamson just needs to go away because he is so much fun to watch because not only is he feels so talented, but you watch him play, you can see how much he loves to play basketball, how much fun he's having. That's why when everyone was saying that he shouldn't come back, I said not a single person that said he shouldn't come back has ever spoken to him because all he does is talk about how much he loves to play basketball. I always expected him to come back. So, you can't not watch him and just think, man, this is special and aren't we lucky to enjoy this for as long as we can.
Yeah, I agree with you because I thought for sure he was coming back, and part of it was you can tell he loves it. You can tell he loves his teammates.
Mm-hmm.
He just wants to play ball. Well, that's what he's doing. He's back playing ball.
Absolutely, and he's having and he has, like I said, he has such a joy about him, and it's not arrogant. I mean, it's not at all arrogant. He's very much within the, I think, the construct of the team, the way he plays. I think he makes everybody around him better. You know, yep. I think he is as real to living up to the hype as any player's been in a long, long time.
Dana, always a pleasure. Thanks so much. It's always great to hear from you. Enjoy the rest of the tournament.
Will do. Thanks, Steve. Take care.
All right. Dana O'Neill from The Athletic. Subscribe to The Athletic if you get a chance to. It's well worth it. I mean, there's great long-form stories that give you pretty really terrific insight. We will come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Hey, that Northumberland with the All-Star game coming up Thursday, that's terrific for the area. Girls and boys basketball. Our Matt Cotrillo is going to join Kevin Herr for the broadcast on Thursday night for the girls' side. Then the Chief Dave Ritchie will join Kevin for the boys' All-Star game. The terrific night. We're thrilled to be carrying it.
Yeah, that'll be in the Fieldhouse on Thursday night. $5 for adults gets you into both games, $2 for students, and money goes to the Senior Scholarship Fund. Dave Ritchie and a lot of guys behind the scenes have been putting that together. For most of the years, the doubleheaders have been on Sunday, so they're changing it up this year and going to have it on Thursday this year. So,
yep. I think it's great. Yep. I think it's great, and looking forward to it. A great event. That's a great event. And I'm thrilled we're carrying it. So. All right. Dennis Dodd next half hour. This is going to be fascinating. Dennis wrote an article about the Tate Martell decision to transfer. It's not as... Martell was the one that I've looked at the entire time since the moment he said, if they let him play right away, does this mean free agency? And anytime something happens, you do always have to at least ask the question, is there something more to this than we know? And Dennis and I are going to explore that in the next half hour. Brandon Gauden in the final half hour. And we'll talk to him. He did the Duke-UCF game on Westwood the other day. It's always fun to catch up with Brandon. Gauden's just one of those really, really nice guys. Yeah, if you met him, you'd never even know he was in broadcasting. He's just a smart, sharp, fun guy to be around. All right, so that's coming up. More at the top of the hour, as well from news. Conor McGregor has what, quit MMA, is that it?
Yeah, he got on Twitter overnight and said he was going to retire. Yes.
He's got bigger problems than that. Nebraska's parted ways with Tim Miles. Now, immediately the name Fred Hoiberg has come up, who did a brilliant job at Iowa State, not so with the Chicago Bulls. Tim Miles, if you've ever been around him, I like being around him. But supposedly there was mutual interest from Fred Hoiberg. Remember, the athletic director at Nebraska did not hire Tim Miles. 7 seasons there. He got them to the NCAA tournament. Got them to the NIT each of the last 2 years. Bill Moose said today that Miles put his heart and soul and energy into the program, but said it had not maintained a level of consistent success. See, this is where you have to ask yourself, who's responsible for getting the hopes of everybody up at Nebraska about basketball? Tim Miles. They've been going on as a pedestrian program forever and ever and ever. And then he got them to the NCAAs. And they're selling out the arena. In some ways, he ended up being a victim of his own success.
Now, they started out like a house of fire this year. And then you could just tell that something wasn't quite right. The issue that he had, but he had to do this, so many transfers. And there's nothing wrong with a transfer, but you always have to ask the reason, like, why did the guy transfer? It's always the first thing I want to know. But there's no natural recruiting area for Nebraska basketball, so you've got to find different ways of doing it. He found it, but they say, we have expectations. Well, who created the expectations? Tim Miles.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.